Radio Netherlands, the home of high frequency since 1927.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
From the west coast of Europe, Radio Netherlands has the teamwork to make the dream work.
Media Network, the weekly communications review, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and here we go. Quite a lot of short items this week, including some follow-ups. Keep those letters, cards, phone calls and faxes coming this way. It's all part of two-way communications.
3, 2, unité, feu. Allumage.
In the early hours of Wednesday morning at midnight 56 UTC to be precise, the first 42L version of Europe's Ariane rocket launcher lifted off successfully from the Space Centre in Kourou, French Guiana, northern South America. Astra 1C, the third in a series of de facto broadcast satellites, was put into orbit alongside a smaller satellite for French radio amateurs. The launch also prompted this call to the answer line.
Hi Jonathan, this is Magnus Gustafsson in Storvreta, Sweden. When can we expect to see some test transmissions from it, some test pictures or something like that?
Well, fairly shortly. Astra 1C is equipped with 18 transponders, not 16 like the other two, and in the course of the next few weeks, it'll be moved to a higher orbit and co-located with Astra 1B and 1A, so that you can pick up all three satellites with one dish pointing in exactly the same direction. Astra say that you can co-locate up to 7 satellites in the same geostationary orbit this way. Test transmissions won't start until the satellite is in the right orbit, though, and it's not there yet, so give it a couple of weeks.
Somewhere in the world, someone writes to Media Network every half hour.
Last week, we noted that Tristan da Cunha had ceased shortwave broadcasting and quietly moved to FM. There was some discussion on the bulletin boards a few weeks back as to whether the American Forces station in Antarctica had been reactivated. Andy Sennett of the World Radio TV Handbook showed me a letter from the station saying that the station was inactive at the moment, but a decision as to whether it would return to 6012 kHz with a 1 kilowatt transmitter hadn't been taken. So has it gone the same way as Tristan da Cunha? Al Quaglieri, who lives in Albany, New York State, USA, reported hearing a station playing pop music on that channel, but it turns out an Italian private shortwave station is currently testing 6012 kHz and getting across the Atlantic by the sound of it. So what about the American Forces Antarctic Network, which has appeared in both AM and single sideband on that channel? Brent Jones works as an information systems coordinator in Antarctica and sent this message from the South Pole station via the Spectrum bulletin board in Melbourne.
If you do manage to log Antarctica, then good luck. Their transmitter is currently down. The last I knew, it'll probably stay off the air or only be short-lived when it comes back up. There's a push to reduce the high-frequency impact of transmitters at the various Antarctic stations, and continuous carrier transmissions are the first to be targeted. It seems kind of funny, but radio frequency interference is becoming a real problem at the U.S. bases in Antarctica, especially with the increase in experiments sensitive to high near-field radio frequency energy. There's no real reason for keeping the station on 6012 kHz anymore, since the stations it targeted, South Pole and outlying field camps, rarely listen to it. McMurdo has their own local FM stations, and TV is piped to most of the buildings on cable, so there's no need for the station around town. Good luck on logging it. Pretty soon, if it hasn't happened already, the plug will be pulled.
So, another disappearing signal. That letter from Brent Jones was read by Robert Chessel, who'll be back at the weekend with Sounds Interesting, including the names of the winners in our confusing calendar competition. 10 lovely prizes are being offered, so if you entered, don't forget to tune our way.
This is the Far East Network.
Chris Untermeyer of Pretoria, South Africa, has two questions concerning Japan. Chris wonders if the US Armed Forces Far East Network in Tokyo, which you just heard, still operates its shortwave transmitter. It was certainly active in the 70s and much of the 80s, because he could hear it when he worked in Thailand. Tetsuo Kondo of the Asian Broadcasting Institute in Japan checked with the station's chief engineer, and the log shows that shortwave from the Far East Network went off in 1988. 3910 and 6155 kHz left the air on May the 5th, 1988 at 0545 UTC, if you're keeping track, and 11750 and 15260 kHz disappeared on May the 31st, 1988 at 0105 UTC. Tetsuo also followed up on a query from Chris Untermeyer concerning the domestic commercial shortwave station, Nihon Shortwave Broadcasting Company, otherwise known as Radio Tampa. They put out business information on 3925, 6055 and 6115 kHz, amongst other channels. Some of the portable shortwave radios in Japan are available with the channels of that station already programmed into it. The 1993 Passport to World Band Radio says that NSB will leave shortwave in 1997, which seems an interesting statement. In fact, NSB tell us they have no plans to discontinue shortwave in 4 years' time. They're looking into satellite radio systems for the long term, though, but they will operate in parallel with shortwave if and when they get going. Here in Europe, a satellite radio station has suddenly started testing shortwave. Radio Europa Info is heard on the 7.74 MHz subcarrier of transponder 14, carrying ProSieben, a television channel on Astra 1A. The channel, in fact, is 11.406 GHz, vertically polarised. Radio Europa Info is also heard on Copernicus and the TVSat 2 satellites. The station also hires 11 hours of airtime on the long-wave transmitter at Bourg on 261 kHz. Earlier this week, Ehad Khodein of our Frequency Bureau noted tests on 5980 kHz as early as 03 hours UTC.
Sie hören eine Kurzwellentestabstrahlung von Radio Europa Info. Radio Europa Info ist ein 24-stündiges Nachrichten- und Informationsprogramm in deutscher Sprache.
The test consists of frequency announcements in German and a request for reception reports to be sent to Radio Europa Info, P.O. Box 5568 in Daun, that's D-A-U-N, in Germany. We phoned the station for more details, and a spokesman in the technical department said they were hiring airtime on a transmitter in the Czech Republic on an experimental basis only.
It's only a test for 2 hours a day, our full program, between 12 and 1 o'clock and 23 to midnight.
And those times in European summertime, of course, 2 hours ahead of UTC. So the live relays of Radio Europa Info are at 10 and 21 hours UTC for 1 hour, but the general tests on 5980 are going out between 03 and 23 hours UTC each day.
It comes from the Czechish Republic.
So you're hiring airtime?
Yeah, and only for 4 to 6 weeks, and then the test phase is closed.
Radio Europa Info, Nachrichten.
And Radio Europa Info, spelled R-O-P-A, incidentally, also noted by Wolfgang Schulz in Hamburg using 5975 kHz late on Tuesday evening. Now to another mystery solved. Nick Meanwell has those details.
Alan Roberts lives in Quebec, Canada, and you may well remember his call to this programme asking if anyone knew anything about Radio Neige. He'd been hearing their narrowband FM signals on 25710, 25900 and 26070 kHz. The programmes were rather repetitive, consisting of French and international pop music, obviously recorded on tape. The voices had French accents, but the only geographical reference was a joke about Martinique. Well, Alan's now solved the mystery and kindly dropped us a line with the solution. The radio and television authorities in France have allocated these three frequencies to a company called Securicable, which operates radio links for ski lift cable cars at over 20 resorts in the French Alps. These provide a musical entertainment service, Radio Neige, for the passengers on the ski lift and the systems used for emergency voice communications during technical breakdowns. The recordings used are prepared by the Paris-based FM commercial network Radio Nostalgie, and in the course of February this year, identifications for Nostalgie and Securi Cable appeared between the songs, and the misleading joke about Martinique vanished. So, that solves that one.
Well, as we head towards the sunspot minimum in a few years' time, not many broadcasting stations are using frequencies between 25600 and 26100 kHz. It's not only propagation, because less than 10% of the radios capable of shortwave reception have the 25 MHz band or 11 metres actually on the radio. If you can tune up there at the moment, there are some interesting things to be found. Like between 9 and 10 hours UTC, tune to 25322.5 kHz, 25322.5, and you may hear this.
To those who just tuned in, this is Australian Armed Forces Radio for the benefit of our troops overseas.
A few months ago, Mike Bird reported that the Australian Armed Forces were using a transmitter at Radio Australia's shortwave facilities in Darwin to reach Australian troops helping in the humanitarian relief in Somalia. The Australian Forces radio is still doing that, but as from this week, they're doing it in a different way. Hugh McKenzie, director of Australian Armed Forces radio, explains what's changed.
We were broadcasting via the national, the Australian National Transmission Authority's a huge transmission set up in Darwin in the Northern Territory from a place up there called the Cox Peninsula. Now, this was a very big system indeed, punching out a signal which was aimed directly at Somalia. We've now changed from that, now that Operation Solace, as far as the Australian Armed Forces is concerned, is nearly over. We've come back into the arms of the Royal Australian Navy, and we are, in fact, using their facilities now to send a signal to Somalia, and also to aim our program and signal at Cambodia, at the Australian troops in Cambodia.
Have you had much response during the campaign in Somalia?
Yes, we have. In fact, response from the men and from all over the world by virtue of requests for QSL cards. Several hundred.
Two single sideband transmitters, each of 40 kilowatts, are being used from different sites in Australia. But where are the programs coming from?
Well, the program is produced from our studios on the top of B Block, what is known as B Block at the Russell Complex, which is, I suppose, you might describe it as Australia's equivalent of the Pentagon, but it's the main defence administrative complex here in Canberra in Australia. And we, in fact, took over the Director General's office, the man who runs public information for the armed services, and installed a temporary studio there. That is then run by landline to HMAS Harman, which is the Navy's main communications base here in Canberra, and then they in turn pick it up and transmit it to their various sites around Australia, which will suit our signal best. The Somali signal goes from the Harold E. Holt base in northwestern Australia at Exmouth. Now, that used to be a joint United States-Australian facility. Australia has recently taken it over completely, and we now broadcast from there. They have an antenna farm, which I'm told is the size of Perth. I've never actually seen it, but it's the size of Perth, and they have an antenna array there, which is aimed directly at Somalia. The Cambodian signal originates here in Canberra from what is known as the Belconnen transmitting station, and it is aimed directly at Cambodia along what is known as the Great Circle Path. So as a concomitant of the Cambodian broadcast, we're also reaching into Afghanistan, or Pakistan-Afghanistan, where Australian troops are based, mines clearance teams, and also into Western Sahara. And also, I'm told, if you listen very carefully, you can hear us in the United Kingdom.
So here's the transmission schedule. Remember, all the frequencies mentioned are in upper sideband. Each broadcast lasts 1 hour. They're on the air to Somalia at 03 hours UTC on 19037.5 kHz, 19037.5. At 9 hours on 25322.5, 25322.5. And at 14 hours on 13508.5 kHz, 13508.5. That channel of 25322.5 kHz at 9 hours is heard well in Europe at the moment. Then as far as Cambodia is concerned, try at 03 hours on 23678.5, 23678.5, at 9 hours on 20418.5, 20418.5, and lastly at 12 hours UTC on 12070.5 kHz, 12070.5. The show at 03 hours UTC is live each day, and the programme's repeated three more times from a DAT tape. They're interested in feedback from anyone who can hear them to this address.
The best way of getting us is care of me, Hugh McKenzie.
All right.
Department of Defence, EMU, which is Electronic Media Unit. And the address is Anzac Park West. And you then write APW, Alpha Papa Whiskey, 1/B/07. And then that's Reid, R-E-I-D, Australian Capital Territory, 2601.
Okay, we've got all that. And is it mainly requests?
It's, in fact, the show pivots around messages. We have a fairly sophisticated telephone answering system. We take the actual call from the caller. Where necessary, and we're loath to do it, but where necessary, we will edit a call to take out, you know, what might best be considered extraneous material, and we will broadcast the call, so the person on the other end can hear a mother, father, wife, loved one's voice. And we think that's terribly important, and we find that the response to actually being able to hear those calls, particularly where troops are in areas where they simply can't go and buy a card, you know, a phone card and call home. Like the fact that they're getting those calls on the air and repeated for those who might have missed them is doing marvels for morale.
Mind you, Australia's done forces radio before now. When the Royal Australian Air Force had a base in Malaysia in the 70s and 80s, they also had a forces radio station on 1445 kilohertz with 400 watts.
RAAF Radio Butterworth is now ceasing transmission from frequency 1445 kHz. This station broadcasts from studios situated at Butterworth in the province Wellesley, West Malaysia. On behalf of the officer in charge, management and staff of RAAF Radio Butterworth, good night.
The days, sadly, of Radio Butterworth, and I mourn its passing, have gone, unfortunately. When Butterworth was downgraded, as it were, by the RAAF, Radio Butterworth was packed up into packing cases, and I believe, I've been looking, trying to find out, because we've considered AAFR a tremendous step in recent times for the armed forces here in Australia. It really is a first, and I would love to have a very small museum, actually, of methods and ways of broadcasting to the troops in the past. And I'm trying to track Butterworth down, Radio Butterworth. I believe it's in packing cases somewhere.
I wonder if the person looking after it is listening. But how long is the present operation beaming at Somalia and Cambodia?
We have permission from what's called COSC here in Australia, which is the Chiefs of Staff Committee. They've looked at our operations over the 17 weeks of Operation Solace. And what they've said to us is, OK, we like what you're doing very much. We are aware of the tremendous effect you've had on morale for the troops in Somalia. And we think you should continue. So, as you know, we're turning in the direction of Cambodia, but we will keep going even after Australia disengages from Cambodia. We will keep going on air for troops, any troops anywhere overseas, as long as there's an Australian presence. We'll do our best to direct our signal at them for a test period of 12 months.
Right, well, very good luck with the work that you're doing. It sounds very interesting.
Thank you very much indeed. I must thank Radio Netherlands for their tremendous interest. I think it's entirely down to you that we've had so much interest from radio operators around the world. I must tell you, we had one marvellous card from Central Siberia the other day, saying that they had in fact been tuned in and listening to us, and they'd heard about us first on one of your programmes.
So we look forward to broadcasting to you again tomorrow. Seriously, folks, if there is anything that you really want to hear or something that you never want to hear again, just let us know and we'll take it into account and probably, no, we won't ignore it. Only joking. See you later, Somalia. Bye-bye, Cambodia. Bye to Bruce.
I'm amazed at how well that channel of 25322.5 kHz does at just 10 hours UTC here in Hilversum when they sign off. Every now and then, we also get phone calls from people who've discovered a remote studio link belonging to a local radio station, WFLA, in Tampa, Florida, USA. This narrowband transmitter's on the air round the clock, it appears, and it's a quite useful beacon as to propagation. Arthur Cushion's on the line now from Invercargill, New Zealand. Arthur, you can hear it at the moment, can't you?
Yes, it does get down here peaking about 0100, but we're just listening to it in AM, and 25870, and the station it's relaying, of course, is at WFLA 970 AM. Interesting, in going back in history, I first verified WFLA in December 1945, and that's the same station which we're now hearing on 25870, peaking around 0100. It's difficult in New Zealand, but we've got a recording.
970 WFLA, cash 3 numbers for Sunday night, 606.
I bet it sounds a bit different now than it did then.
Yes, that was, those days there were hardly any stations on the dial.
Thank you, Arthur. Yesterday, May the 12th, the Voice of America started testing its new medium wave transmitter site on the island of Sao Tome, that lies to the west of Gabon in Africa. The power is 100 kilowatts to start with, but if successful, the power will be boosted to 500 kilowatts in a few years' time, and shortwave transmitters are also planned. The frequency is 1530 kilohertz, and the station is currently using English only, and the hours of operation 03 to 07, and again 16 to 22 hours UTC. Frequency again 1530 kilohertz from Sao Tome.
Radio Netherlands, Continental Talk Radio.
We're off to the Caribbean now, and to Cuba in particular, which is feeling the effects of a tight economic squeeze, especially since trade with Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union has been considerably reduced. Cuba has its own shortwave broadcasting station, which the government sees as its way of breaking the isolation which has developed. The people who work at Radio Havana Cuba appear to do so for various reasons. For some, there's a clear commitment to the communist cause and the revolution. For others, it's just a job. But there's also a lot of national pride mixed up in there too, a sense that Cuba needs to stand up to its nearest neighbour, the United States. The US Information Agency broadcasts politically orientated radio and TV programmes in the form of the Radio and TV Martí operations. Radio Havana's English programmes certainly contain quite a lot of politics, but the tone has softened considerably since the 1970s and early 80s, when listeners were asked to write essays about the successes of the Cuban Revolution. Their current contest, which asks you which of three beaches you'd like to relax on, is more geared to boosting tourism.
Once more, choose just one, Veradero Beach, Cayo Largo, or Havana's eastern beaches, and write why you'd like to be there. Then send your answer to Radio Havana, Cuba, Post Office Box.
Radio Havana, Cuba's European service has suffered since program relays via the Soviet Union have ceased. Now everything comes direct. Around 20 hours UTC, the Spanish service is buried under the Voice of America.
This program has come to you from the...
But reception of Radio Havana on 17705 kilohertz improves an hour later at 21 hours, by which time the Voice of America signed off.
Transmitiendo desde Cuba, territorio libre en América.
The English service appears much weaker on 17760 kHz with news at 21 hours UTC. Arnie Corro is senior advisor to the director of Radio Havana Cuba. He's probably better known as the producer of the station's media program, DX's Unlimited. He designed and built Radio Havana Cuba's transmitting facilities back in the 60s. and now looks after the frequency management. He explains what sort of transmitters they're using.
They are brown bobberish. We have two brown bobberish of 1961 vintage, much modified. And these are kept on the air due to a tremendous effort of the Cuban technicians and engineers. With they have been updated and so on. And then we have Russian and German transmitters, West German transmitters and Russian transmitters.
Is it difficult to get parts for these transmitters now?
Well, now it's difficult to buy parts because of the current foreign currency shortage of the country. We make a lot of practically all the mechanical parts of equipment, so that leaves us with having to buy mostly power tubes and the odd component that may fail, like, for example, a vacuum capacitor, that sort of thing. The transmitter's power level are 250 kilowatts, Russian origin. These are modern transmitters. Then we have 100 kilowatts, the brown bobberish, and Russians of 100. We have 75 kilowatts, 50, and the 30 and 20 SSBs. We were able to put one more SSB transmitter ready to go.
So before the Cuban Revolution, there was no external shortwave voice from Cuba whatsoever?
No, there were several stations that paralleled their medium wave service with a shortwave transmitter. And this was done as some kind of prestige type of operation, to say on the air you are broadcasting on AM and also on shortwave.
Is shortwave still important in Cuba now, domestically?
No, the island is covered by 200 medium wave transmitters all over the island, pretty well covered by these five different programs of different program contents, plus provincial networks on the 14 provinces and the special municipality of the Isle of Youth, south of Cuba. And also there are approximately about 35 radio stations of the type you will call community radio stations.
I see. But do people listen to shortwave for news from abroad, or doesn't that really bother them?
Well, people do listen to shortwave from abroad as another option, as they watch TV or hear the medium wave radio. As a matter of fact, the radios that were imported from the Soviet Union, practically all of them have shortwave capacity for receiving shortwave. The most popular receiver in Cuba is what you call in Europe the Vega 206.
Radio Havana Cuba focuses its coverage on North, Central and South America. They have sets of antennas with beams on specific cities. There are beams to Caracas, Venezuela, Mexico City and a beam to Buenos Aires. There are two antennas for Europe, one better than the other. The simple one is a rhombic construction, which was used for point-to-point telephone communication between Cuba and Europe, but is now used for broadcasting. The SSB point-to-point transmitters, which were phased out for communications traffic, have then been taken over by Radio Havana Cuba. Coro says that the response to the SSB test has been good, although the use of SSB has been cut back slightly since the heavy storms hit the island on March the 13th. Cuba used to swap programs by satellite with Radio Moscow. Cuba's European service went out on Russian transmitters, and Radio Moscow was broadcast from transmitters in Cuba. In fact, there were reactions in the US press when Radio Moscow's English broadcasts went out for the first time via Havana. But with the breakup of the Soviet Union, Cuba's lost the link.
So now we are reaching Europe on our own power, which is not very much to Europe. We can only use 100 kilowatts because we don't have antennas capable of taking the 250s electrical energy generated by firing oil. And there's an oil shortage. So, for example, Radio Havana, Cuba had to reduce its overall schedule in approximately by one quarter.
Arnie Coro, who says that they're also making use of electronic mail to supplement the rather slow postal system there. There was also a forwarding scheme announced by an enthusiastic listener in Canada, but Arnie says that wasn't official and the station has now disassociated itself with the person involved. And that's it from the Media Network production team. Have a peaceful weekend. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.